Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Business Book Show. And I have on the show today one of my, professional heroes, Jack Mitchell. Now, for anyone who is in sales, you should have come across the book Hug Your Customers. It's a Wall Street Journal bestseller and bestseller on a couple of other different lists. And then there was Jack's follow-up book, Hug Your People. And it's based on Jack Mitchell's experience as the my words fail me. It's always bad for a wordsmith to lose his way. Third-generation retailer in Connecticut is where I was going with that. Three generations of a retailer in Connecticut. And Mitchell's they've clothed U.S. presidents, senators, celebrities, people from all of the Fortune 500. Everybody who's anybody knows that if you want to do clothes right, you go to Mitchell's. And so he took all of those years of experience, turned them into two wonderful books, which is how I came to meet him. So, Jack, thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about your book.
Derek, I'm thrilled to do that. Thrilled to share about my book and also to have the pleasure of doing it with you.
Well, so what was the impetus for the book? What made you one day get up and decide I want to write a book about a clothing store?
You know, I guess I always had in the back of my mind or in my heart that I wanted to share how my brother and I and our family and my mom and dad, you know, started our family business and how we've grown the family business over the years. And what happened actually, it was just back in 2001. It was at the CEO summit in our industry at the Boulders, a nice place to have a conference. And I was asked to be a panelist, not a keynote speaker in those days, to describe our to describe businesses. And I was one of six. Before our panel went on at about 8:30 in the morning, Robin Lewis is one of the gurus in our industries, and we're in we sell men's and women's clothing. That's the products that we sell, upper end in the luxury space. He jumped up and down, and it was the .com era, if you're old enough, young enough, or whatever, to remember that time when he got up and said, if you didn't have a sexy website, you know, bricks and mortar stores were over in a decade. Everybody was going to be buying every bit of merchandise on the internet, whether it be a tie, a sock, a blouse, a skirt, a piece of jewelry. Everything was going to be done on the internet. And the bricks and mortar stores were over. And everybody cheered, you know, they say everybody agreed with that. There were 300 plus, more or minus, CEOs that were in the room. And then our panel came up, and we all had 5 or 6 minutes to talk about our businesses. And the first CEO, she said essentially the same thing. Next gentleman, he said the same thing. And I got up, and it was one of these stages, Derek, where you can sort of walk down in the middle of it. And in the middle of, you know, and I said, you know, we're going to thrive and not only survive, we're going to thrive over the next decade because we're all about something I haven't heard anybody talk about yet. We're about customers. Customers for us are the absolute center of the universe. And we believe that there's a place for customers to have experiences in our stores. And they come in one customer at a time, and we know their names and their nicknames and their birthdays and their anniversary dates and their kids' names and their name of their dogs and their cats. And we know we know absolutely with our technology that we do have, and we use it to record all the sales. We know every SKU to every single the customer that we sell to, what they buy, what they don't buy. But better than that, we try to get to know, it's not just myself and my family, it's our sales associates that are on the selling floor. Everybody's in the store welcoming like you're welcoming someone into your home. and we have coffee, which my mom and dad started in 800 square feet over 50 years ago, I said. And they were in 800 square feet, and their mom brought the coffee pot from home to serve coffee and welcome our friends, who were, of course, our first customers. And we're still doing that today. And we just make people feel comfortable and make them feel great when they're shopping with us in our stores. And it's our seamstress tailors. They build relationships with the customers. Our buyers, how do you know what to buy unless the buyers are on the selling floor, meeting and greeting and listening to what customers are buying and why they're buying? Or if we have a new, if somebody has a new collection, what kind of collections we should be buying, because our customers travel the world. So I just emphasize this over and over again, this personal relationships, one customer at a time, center of the universe. And then we sat down and our panel finished, and I walked off the stage, and there was these round tables, if you can just picture this. And this gentleman, who was the head of Berdorf Goodman at the time, a great store in New York City, owned by Neiman Marcus, he put his finger in my face and he said, "Jack, the next thing you're going to tell me is you and your employees actually hug your customers." And I closed my eyes and I saw my brother Bill, who is actually in the next office here in a minute. He just came off the selling floor, and I can hear him. And my brother came out of the womb hugging, literally bear hugging. I saw a gentleman who just retired after almost 50 years working at Richards, our store in Greenwich, Connecticut, which was our second store. Frank Elagi, who was hugging. In fact, today over the on, I somebody told me Matt Lauer today on the Today Show was talking about Richards and Frank and all the people that he's been with and been clothing him over the years. So whether it be Matt Lauer or Al Roker before Al lost all that weight. And I said, "Doesn't everybody hug their customers?" And I realized just like that, Derek, that not everybody does hug their customers. And then I said, "What's a hug? A hug is any, it's a metaphor. Yes, it can be a bear hug, but it's a metaphor for any tiny act or deed, that actually touches the customers." I began to think that way. And then my 8 minutes or 6 minutes or whatever it was, and my reaction to this gentleman, I said to myself, gee, maybe I could be a speaker, because at the time I was 64 years old. And I was saying to myself, my brother Bill and I had always wanted, and we were in the process of completing it, gifting the equity in the business and the real estate we own, building here in Westport. We own a building in Greenwich. And then we subsequently, have stores in San Francisco. We have a store there in the real estate. And we had gifted all this to our sons. We have four sons. My brother has three. And they were in the family business, all of them helping run the family business. And so I thought, well, what was I going to be doing, 10 years hence? And I said, maybe I could be a speaker. And that sounded great. So because they asked me almost a week later, would I be a keynote speaker at the next meeting, which was for all the menswear. And I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And that I began to say, what was I going to talk about? And one of my sons said, "Dad, remember you mentioned what Ron said about hugging your customers?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, that's what you should do. You should focus on how we do that, why we do it, what motivates us to do it all these years, and how we've built it into the whole process of strategically of what we do." And so I did that. And that turned out to be a very, everybody loved my speech, candidly, without sounding in with some humility. And then all of a sudden, contacted the Washington Speakers Bureau, and I said, "I'd like to be speaking on this hug your customer idea, personalizing customer service the Mitchell way." And Tony D'Amelio, he was actually a customer, even though that was the Washington Speakers Bureau. He said, "Jack, you need a book. You can't. Nobody's going to listen to you unless, nobody's going to pay you." And while the money was secondary, even it wasn't my high priority at all. For me, it was just putting it down in a piece, just sharing our ideas from our family with others. And so I said, "Okay, well, I'll think about that." And then 3 weeks later, in waltzed Jack Romanos, who at the time was the CEO of Simon & Schuster. He was a good customer, a great customer, and a friend. One of our boys had dated his daughter in Wilton, Connecticut, where we live. So I said to him, "Jack, I got this great idea. It's called Hug Your Customers. sexy, I love it, sexy title. I said, well, what do you think? He said, I'll give you an hour of my time. Get your thoughts together and come into the city. Call my assistant. So that's what I did. And I called and I made my little presentation. I'm dyslexic, so it was hard for me to write it all up, but I put some notes down. And he brought out Fred Hills, who was his editor-in-chief at the time. And they both loved it. And so that's what happened. The while he didn't buy the book, I eventually, eventually he Fred said to me, Jack, you're not going to write this book yourself. You need help, don't you? I said, of course I do. I said, I'm a retailer, not an author, not a writer, but I went to graduate school. But of course my degree, would you believe, is in Chinese history. I have a master's degree in Chinese history at Berk from Berkeley. But I can write. I can, but he said, and he said, I'll
That's
find.
very far from home.
Right. He said, I can, I'll find you a collaborator or a ghostwriter. I said, great. And he found Sonny Kleinfeld, who has been I call him collaborator, on my two books, and I've written a couple more that hopefully will be published, so someday. And he's, I have the ideas, I dictate them up, I write them up, and then he's captured my voice and he makes them sing. And it became a second career for me. I've done the book, as you well know, has sold, several hundred thousand copies, and then the second book came along because everybody asked me, how do you find these people that you talk about? Because one of the paradigms in my book, which is that I'm sure remember, is very simple. Most clothing stores like ours, which are great ones, Neiman's, Barney's, Saks, Nordstrom's, they even Nordstrom's, they're best, they're really product oriented more than they are service oriented, and they very rarely talk about their people. Well, I flip it around and I say it's all about great people. We have to have good people that we can educate and train, and then they become really excellent in whatever they do, whether they be tailors or seamstresses or sellers or buyers. And then they deliver this personalized service. And then, by the way, we have the finest products in the world. We try to for our customers. But if you wake up and you're part of Nordstrom, part of Neiman Marcus, you wake up thinking product, what's selling today? What's the most fashionable part of? And then you think, I mean, Neiman's gives personal service, but that's not their. It's not their driving force, not in their DNA first. That's my opinion anyway. And then of course they very rarely talk about their great people, where we're all about great people, personalized, who, because you don't give personal service in a vacuum, Derek. Obviously you give it with through great people. And so I wrote about all that, and the book sold a lot of copies. As I said, I've done over 200 motivational speeches throughout the country and the world on my my book, with companies like Merrill Lynch and Starbucks and Nike and many different other places here. Did them in South Africa. I've done them in all over the world, and I love it because it's been a sort of a second career for me. And then I also enjoy it because I learn something every time I do a speech. I get to meet the top people in the company, and then I learn what's happening, what's new, what's exciting, and I bring that back to our family business. I could go on. I don't know what else. What else you'd like to ask me on it? But to me, it's been a wonderful journey. It's changed my life, and I still wake up thinking what I'm going to be writing and doing. I've written a book on even a more of a interesting book on selling, the whole process of selling, that I'm negotiating now with publishers. But I still love what my day job. I'm on the selling floor, on busy times and on weekends, Saturdays, here in Connecticut. And when the stores have grown from this little 800 square feet foot store in 1958 when my parents were in their mid 50s, to now we have eight stores. Westport, Connecticut, Greenwich, Connecticut, Richards, Huntington, Long Island, Mitchell's of Huntington, San Francisco, Wilkes-Bashford out of bankruptcy in 2009. Wilkes went bankrupt, and Wilkes has a store, had a store. We have the stores in Palo Alto, so we have two in the Bay Area. And then just a year and a half ago, we put a partnership together with Mario Bizio in Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon. So now we have eight stores. He has two in Portland. So we have eight stores. And again, this whole hugging idea, this hugging culture of hugging your customers, of every little, act or deed that makes them feel great. I tell hugging stories, and then also the next phase is I'm actually doing workshops for companies now, where, after they hear my speeches and read my books, they say, "Don't you have a workshop?" And I've teamed up with a company called the New Haven Consulting Group, and we're partnering to do workshops. We're just in the early phases of that, but I dream it will be a good sized business, because I think companies are, especially in today's day, because business in the retail side, it doesn't have to be retail, it could be any business that has customers, but they need specific things to help them educate their associates to really personalize the relationship with each and every customer. How do we do that? So that's sort
Now
of
you
the
mentioned.
background.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So no, I'm open for your comments and your, you've heard, probably heard and read my stories, but what do you think?
Well, talking about stories, one of the things that I love about Hug Your Customers is that, I mean, Jack, you could have written a book that was quite, prescriptive. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. These are the computer systems that you have in place. But you didn't. Your whole book is this wonderful collection of relevant stories and anecdotes, and put together quite well. But what I love is just in those stories, your reader is able to connect with you. So it's not just reading this book that has this information on how to sell better and how to give the customer a better experience, but you tell a story, and in that story, they get the inspiration for having that as a goal, but in doing so, they get to connect with you as an author. So I imagine, I mean, just like, for us, this is the first time that you and I have ever spoken over the phone. But yet, I feel like I know you. I've read about your sons. I mean, I remember the story about your parents, and you were talking about your mom and the coffee pot. I remember that, out of the book. Those little details, that's what makes your book so rich, so memorable.
Thank you. Thank you. That always makes me feel great when I hear that. Because I believe stories, from the very beginning of time, I think people that tell stories, they relate. If they have to be genuine. This is the big part. And you picked up, I mean, every story I have is for real. I mean, my opening story, actually, in my Hug Your People book, was generated because every time I do one of these speeches, most before I wrote Hug Your People, they would say, and even though I put it in my Hug Your Customer book, this idea of, it was called The Big Secret. That was a whole part or chapter part that I had, because that was about people. But they would say to me, how do you find these people? How do you hire them? How do you do this? And I was thinking about maybe doing, emphasizing that in a second book. And my assistant at the time, but very rarely these days do we get real letters, right? I mean, everything's email or texting, even in 2008 and 2009. But my assistant put some a 8-page calligraphy letter in green calligraphy from a woman named Sarah Butterfield, who I changed her name in the book. And she said in this letter to me, I read it on a Sunday, but she put this my mail together on a Saturday night. And I read on a Sunday, I said, "If everything you say in your book, I just read your book, Hug Your Customers." And she said, "If everything you say in the book, I want to work for you and your family. Because where I am, I sell $1,200,000 worth of shirts and ties. But they won't let me. It's against the rules." As you know from my book, we're a values-based company. We're not a rules and regulations-based company. We have guidelines and high standards. Anyway, she said, "They won't let me sell suits and sport coats and shoes, a whole wardrobe, because I'm building these relationships, but they're all around shirts and ties. I want to build them around people. And she said, and then these, of course, the men are married, and most of them are married to females, but some are gay. But they won't let me sell women's wear in the store. And, these rules. And she said, I'm a single mom. I'm in New York City. But I need to be able I want to grow my business. I want to grow myself. And you know what I did, Derek? What do you think I did on a Sunday? I picked up the phone and I called her, right? When I called her, and then she came up the next week. She lived to our Greenwich store, Richards in Greenwich, which, by the way, started, we bought in 1995, and it was across the street in 8,000 square feet. I was doing about $9 million in 8,000 square feet, which is, even in those days, a nice number. And we moved it across the street to 27,000 square feet and put women's wear as well as men's wear. Anyway, she came in, and it was 8 interviews later, because it was more important for her to make sure that she was making this a good decision, a great decision, because we try to hire people for life, for a career. That's who we are. We want to make sure that people, at least in the beginning, it's a free country, thank goodness, they can leave when they want to, and we can fire at will. But that's not who we are. We're trying to take people and that really want to work in this kind of an atmosphere and an environment and a culture that really wants to make people feel great and gives them the tools. We enable them to do it through, obviously, the products we sell. But as you said, we're very data-driven. We have very simple, sophisticated computer system so we know the score on everything, what they sell, what they don't sell, everything about the customer. And then as we learn about you, we put it into the computer. And then we find out who you are. If we haven't found that in conversations, we can obviously Google you. We find out who you are. And the rest is history. Anyway, she's become one of the most prolific sellers we've ever had. And she moved eventually to the community and part of the community. So those are the kind of things that was my second book, Hug Your People, the various parts of various elements of being, recognized. What are the principles of that particular book? But again, the same thing happened. I just felt I had to write it because it was something that people were asking me about. And I I don't know about you, but I've other authors that you've talked with, but I learn every time I write something. I learn about myself and other people. That's the most, I don't try to push, I try to pull information and things out of people. And then when that happened, it pulled a lot about, I had the question, as you said, why did I write the book? What was the purpose of it? And I came to the conclusion, clearly it wasn't, I like to make money, but the money off the books where I have made some money is in my speeches. But I learned as a consultant, with speaking, if you don't charge, the people don't show up. And when they show up, isn't it? Consultants, if you don't pay a consultant, you may not think it's valuable. And then they buy books. I've done speeches where they, Starbucks bought, 3,000 or 4,000 when I did part of their leadership speeches in 2004. And Lexotica bought the same kind of, and that's what's going to be happening now in the workshops. If this workshop idea, which I believe it will, but when it does, if I have a big company, which I can't tell you who I'm talking with, but there's the large companies that want to know how to do personalized service better than they're doing. And the book and other ideas will generate a lot of people reading the book and a lot of people going through the workshops. And it could be financially, like one of these startup companies that we sell to the leaders in Silicon Valley. Our store in Palo Alto, I can't even tell you the people. I wouldn't tell you the people that we have there, but you can imagine with Apple and Facebook and Instagram and Google and all these, we have some of the real leaders of Silicon Valley because they don't know anything about clothes, but they know everything about technology, and they respect us. Steve Jobs put in his book, which is a great book, I'm sure you know that, and you probably read it and promoted it. He put in there that he shopped at Wilkes-Barre before we bought it and after we bought it, which was very nice of him. And that sort of, I think, helped bless the fact that we weren't just investors, but we really were retailers that were on the selling floor and were working one-on-one with customers and trying to sell them or have them buy, rather than we sell them, have them buy things, clothing that they like and that they need and why they need it in today's day and age.
Yeah, can we rewind for just a little bit? Earlier, you were
Sure.
talking about whenever your publisher asked if you wanted to write the book or if you wanted to work with a collaborator, and you said yes. So then he connected you with Sonny Kleinfeld. Would you mind talking about your relationship? How did it work with you having these ideas going back and forth and shaping the book?
Well, what I would do with Sonny, and by the way, he when I met him and worked out my arrangement with him, he had already written like 20 books. He's a senior reporter for the New York Times, and the New York Times allows him to work with an author one book a year or so. So they it's not a secret that he's like I give him credit in the book, but he said for marketing reasons that I should just be the author. And but because these are my ideas and he takes them, so either I dictate them. At one time I had an assistant that took verbatim dictation, or I can use my iPhone. First it was a BlackBerry, now it's an iPhone or an iPad, and I write in, either talk into it or I write into it my stories about what's happening, about whatever. First, I have an outline in my head of where we're going, and then Sonny then takes them, and he takes a lot of these stories that you say are that you've been more you the real stories, and then he puts them in an order that shapes the entire book. So it's really a partnership between the two of us. So he really he's learned my DNA in terms of where I'm coming from. He's gifted in the sense that that's one of, he does feature stories primarily. He has, I think, two Pulitzer Prizes. Well, he did all the lead stories for 9/11. He lived downtown in New York, and so that's the kind of, he loves the human interest stories. That's why we connected so well, because he's a real hugger. He's a quiet, introverted hugger, but he just relates to what I have to say. So even today, if I have something I really want to do it for an article or something, I'll just call him and say, here's what I want to say, and I will write it down, or else say, here's some bullet points, and I just talk to him, and then he sends it back, and it sounds like me.
Jack, on behalf of ghostwriters everywhere, can I tell you how much I appreciate you being so forthright about that relationship? I think that too many people have, whenever they hear ghostwriter, they think of one person writing the book and someone else getting all the credit. And that's not really professional ghostwriting. That's really just being a fraud. What you've
Right.
described is what professional ghostwriting is, where it is a collaboration, where someone who has the skills, someone who is a professional writer, comes together with
Right.
someone who has the ideas and the experience and the expertise, the person who is the author, and captures their ideas and their voice in the unique medium that is a book. That's
Well
ghostwriting.
said. Well said, Derek. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And but again, I am a storyteller. In fact, I have my kid with my wife, candidly. My wife and I have been married 57 years, so it's worked out pretty well.
Congratulations. Wow.
And we have seven grandchildren, five and four in college, one just graduated, because we're working on the fourth generation for our family business. But anyway, she says, "Jack, tell me the end of the story. Tell me, don't, I don't need the whole story."
Tell me the punchline.
Because she's very analytical, very data driven, very detailed oriented, and she's an introverted thinker. She's not an introvert, but she's an introverted thinker. I'm an extroverted thinker. I get my energy by talking and
Yeah.
then by writing. If I talk it out, then I write it down and I something comes up that may be new or different or that I really believe in strongly, then I write it down. And I'm blessed now with an assistant that while she doesn't take verbatim dictation, if I talk it, she just sits at the computer and writes and types it up. And we've been working out for 5 years. She's probably even listening to part of this. She's in the next office. She knows me and I know her, and she'll say time out. And then she can also, like Sunny, she can clean, we call it clean it up a little bit. Just put it in a little bit better phrase, not phrasing it differently, but making sure that, because she knows me well enough that what I really mean by this story or that article that we're working on, or if I'm, by the way, I do a hug of the week story. This is you like the stories, because of how the book has influenced people here. You can imagine, we have to live up to the hugging culture. So if we make, when we make, everybody makes mistakes. You know, from my book, I say I love mistakes. So we all make mistakes. But when I wrote the book, now all of a sudden, if we don't execute the extra mile and do something extra for the customer that makes them feel great, then they say, well, you look, you wrote the book. Where is this hugging stuff? So I write a hug. So I every week on a Sunday, you know, before, usually between Amy and I work on like just emails on a Sunday, I will find a story, or she will, but most of the time I will. They'll send them, people will send them to me from these 8 stores of something that was important to do and that happened. And I mean, a story that isn't in my book, just to give you one that's, we have, this is a story of a gentleman that is one of the top hedge fund men in the world, and he's flying in his plane somewhere in over this great country, and like in Montana all of a sudden, and he gets this call from his assistant that he has to be in Los Angeles for a CNBC news thing, a very important that he wanted to do, but asking to do, and it came through. But he has no suit, he has no sport coat, he has his casual clothes. So we have his measurements. He's the kind of person that doesn't really like to come into the store. We go to his office to fit clothes and so forth. But we have his measurements, and he's a 42 long, I think, something like that. And he buys Zegna clothing. So we tried to, and he wanted to, what he always likes, just basic clothes. So we had either a blue suit or a blue striped suit. We didn't have one in Connecticut, but he needed this for an interview. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He needed it for tomorrow, for the next morning in Los Angeles. Anyway, long story short, we found one. We had one in Brooks Bashford in San Francisco. We did the, you know, the tailor, Antonello, who's been there for 20 years. Just, he did up the alterations based on our, got the shoes, got the shirt, the tie, the whole nine yards. Jeff Karelik, who's in charge of our stores in California, he got on an airplane, flew down to Los Angeles, and at 10 o'clock had the suit ready, the concierge, and the man got on the, you know, CNBC and made the, was pleased as tickle pink. And, you know, I can't even tell you who he was, but you can imagine. But it doesn't really matter who he was. We would do it for anyone. That's always the point of the stories.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, we did one yesterday. It was in my last talk of the week this Sunday. Our store Mario's, somehow they forgot to put a polo shirt in to one of their top customers who was headed to, I think, Hawaii or somewhere. Somewhere in Mexico, the south. Anyway, we had a layover in San Francisco, and Jeff went, again, Jeff Grelick got in his car, drove to the airport, and gave him this polo shirt that we had. We had a similar one in San Francisco, so he could take this polo shirt. For some reason, it was very, very important to him. And so we do those things. That's hugging your customers. That's who we are. But for me, it's, you know, then I get the response. But everybody sees that. I send it to the 405 people that work with us through emails.
So, I mean, this book, the first book that you wrote, it's been this catalyst for, maybe not for change, but maybe it's been the accelerator for launching this second career of yours, for having It's one thing to have a culture inside of one store or in one geography, but whenever you start having geography, whenever you start working in geographies, having multiple stores and people in multiple geographies, having that adhesive culture gets a little bit harder. So, but the between the book and then the things that the book has launched, it sounds like it has been this, I don't want to say unifier, but it's been an incredible tool for you to spread this idea, not only with other companies, but within your own company as it's grown from coast to coast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a great journey. And I don't think the journey's over. I think the best days and the years are to come, as we're having fun, even until we are online now. I don't know if you should go online. We're trying to personalize relationships on the internet. So we, for example, if you sign into all your passwords and everything, you could you're if you're a customer, which is why we started, because we knew our customers were also buying online, up pops the picture of the sales associate that is responsible for you. We're not, no one's on commission. The stores we bought in Mario's are still on commission, but the rest of the stores are not. But we like to build relationships with a sales associate, and then you can help navigate through the entire site. Let's say you sit by a pair of Todd shoes, like the pair of Todd shoes I have on here right now, talking with you. I didn't have in my size, but I liked them. They're like leather suede sneakers, and I saw that we had them in San Francisco, so they sent them in for me, and I didn't have to. I don't have to buy them until I like them, and that's called reserve in store. So sometimes our customers, these days you have to return everything. Well, we just have it. If you're a customer, you say, "Well, I'll be in next Tuesday and see if I like the Todd shoes." Well, that's great for us too, Derek, because that brings you into the store, and maybe you don't like the shoes, but maybe you'd like some other shoes, or you forgot to buy your spouse it's your anniversary, and you forgot about it, and you buy him a nice diamond ring or something. So all of a sudden, so it's a way that we're generating business through using the internet as really a omni-channel vehicle.
Jack, before I let you get back to any of your many endeavors, plus keeping up with four, five, and seven grandchildren, are there any parting words of wisdom or advice that you'd give to people who are thinking about or trying to write a business book?
I would urge every, and I think there's a book in a lot of people, and I would urge them to really do it. It's a wonderful experience to write a book, and it isn't as difficult as I think a lot of people think. If you find, like I did, a collaborator, I mean, you need help. I mean, I've always needed help in everything that we've done. We've had a business family consultant, we have an advisory board, so you need help to do it. It should read your book, and you should find out how there are various ways to do it, but get it out, put it down on a piece of paper, write it down. I would don't hesitate. I mean, just try. It may take longer than you think. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you can just sit down and write it up. I mean, I have one son who has this unbelievable skill, Dark. He did it in junior high school, and he did it in college. He just sits down, he thinks about it, and just does it right up. Very rarely changes more than a few words. That's not I am. I, but once you finish it, that's it. You can't always make edits because you could be editing forever. But I would just urge anyone that's, you have a book in you, get it out.
That's great advice. Get
And
it
do
out.
it. Do it. Like Nike says. Go for it. And it's fun.
It is. It's always a different experience than I think anybody anticipates it being. But I've never heard someone who finished their book who said that it wasn't worth it.
Right, exactly. And in my book, I mean, people have said to me, And I think it's true. I mean, I have to hug myself first. That sounds, chauvinistic or, too self-centered, but you have to have confidence that you can do it. And once you start it and it just flows out, then it's really magic when you see something pop up that you've written. And if people like it, it's even nicer, like yourself. I deeply appreciate your kind words about my book and how it's moved you and others too.
I think it's a wonderful example of what business books should be.
Thank you very much.
It has been my pleasure. Well, for everyone listening, of course, I recommend reading Hug Your Customers, and then there's Jack was kind enough to send me a second edition of Hug Your Customers. There's also Hug Your People. You can go to Jack's website, hugyourcustomers.com, which is about the book and what Jack's doing to promote the ideas in it. But at the same time, do yourself a favor and go to mitchells.com, which is the umbrella under which all of their stores sit. And there are some great videos on there and some other resources and ideas. And you get a real sense of the business that's behind these books. And if you read the book and you get familiar with the stores, you can get a great idea of how the book helps the stores and the stores helps the book. There's this beautiful alignment there of the one helping the other, which I think is what business books ultimately should do. They should be aligned with whatever your strategic goals are. And if you have a place-based business or a service-based business or whatever it is, they should complement each other. And Hug Your Customers as an example of exactly how to do that. Well, Jack, again, thank you so much. And I sincerely hope that we get to meet in person sometime.
Let's do it for sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
And same to you.